Hello, listeners. Welcome to the 50th or 3rd anniversary of the Smooth Traffic podcast, Somalia's favourite podcast, a podcast even the Pope refuses to listen to. So, in this episode, we have got a little bit of a 50th, 3rd birthday party, and we're going to talk about some of our favourite moments throughout Smooth Traffic history. Of course, there will be the return of popular segments. I'm going to talk about some more art. And we're going to do a little bit of talking about gaming in this episode as well, which I think you'll find features a particularly interesting bit about horses. But above all of that, the big thing about this episode is the world exclusive passenger ride in an Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quadrifoglio. So,
and a couple of other cars, three other cars.
Yeah, some other cars as well, but they're all small points compared to the world exclusive passenger ride in the Alfa Romeo Stelvio.
You're starting to sound like me now.
Quadrifoglio. I don't sound like you, Ben. You're BBC. You'd be like, "Hello, welcome to the BBC News today."
I was referring to the passenger bit, but
fine. Have some rain. Lovely. So yeah, 50th anniversary.
So we're excited enough to bring you a world exclusive.
World exclusive!
From the mind of Jonathan Edge.
From my mind?
Yes, your opinions is what we need here, John, because...
Oh, okay, yeah.
You are about to give us an exclusive, world-first, passenger experience from the brand new Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quadrifoglio?
Yep, that's the one, King. In fact, I think it might have gone beyond being a world exclusive now. I think this might be a... universal exclusive, King.
I don't think we can use that term because that might suggest that the Universal Film Company have some kind of ownership.
Smooth Traffic is not affiliated with Universal Studios.
Thanks, Ben.
There we go. That's sorted out now.
So, Johnny, tell us all about the passenger experience.
Okay, well, it was really fast.
It's episode 50 then, lads. Can you believe that? We've done 50 episodes of Smooth Traffic. It's only taken us 3 years.
It's not bad, is it? To be fair.
It's a good run rate.
It's a good run rate, yeah. Exactly that, Ben.
Test match run rate.
Yeah, that's a good description, actually.
If the days are the balls bowled and the episodes are the runs scored, we're 50 for about 1,000 balls.
I mean, this segment just sums up the previous 49, really, doesn't it? Not very well thought through, a bit dull.
No.
All right then, so what are your favourite memories from the last, 49 episodes, I suppose? Anything?
I don't think there is any great moments in any of the last 49 episodes. And in fact, I don't think this is a particularly good podcast, so... I mean, there was one moment that I particularly liked, and that was when we did an episode without Ben. I thought that was a high point in Smooth Traffic history.
Wasn't that like episode 2 or something?
No, we did a couple.
Have we done a couple, have we? Well, yeah. they'd make it into my top 3 moments then. And the other best moment I thought was when Ben made me cry when he asked you. I still chuckle about this sometimes to myself when I think about it, but when Ben asked you whether your old Alfa was still on the road.
Oh, really?
And that reduced me to tears.
Now,
yeah.
For the listeners, before we started, John said, "I've got one moment that I really enjoyed from all this." And I said, "I bet I know what it is." So I wrote it down and I sent it to Ben.
Yeah.
And Ben, can you reveal what I wrote down?
Yeah. Just send it on to you now, guys.
When King Ben teabagged a badger.
Ben.
When did that happen, Ben? King, you've got some explaining to do. When have you been teabagging badgers? That's quite dangerous. That's not even...
Let me forward on what I sent Ben, because he's been a bellend.
I just forward it on.
Oh, I see. So I wrote in your handwriting, Ben.
And you always refer to yourself as King.
And I refer to myself in the third person. No, I wrote Ben asking if my Alfa 145 was still on the road. Not...
Yeah.
The time I teabagged a badger.
Your handwriting is absolutely appalling, King. I can barely... I mean, does that even say 145? Why have you tried to join up capital letters? Who joins up capital letters?
John, I was writing quickly. And then I realised that I could have just typed out what I was going to say rather than actually physically writing it on a piece of paper and taking a photo of that.
But I've never seen anyone write in capitals that are joined up.
They're not joined up. Not intentionally, they are. Anyway.
Well. That says a lot, doesn't it? So you didn't really teabag a badger then? Because that, I mean, that would be cracking content for the 50th episode.
It'll be on YouTube soon, don't worry.
I was going to say, there's a YouTube video waiting to happen. No, I didn't teabag a badger. Sorry.
That's unfortunate.
I beanbagged one once.
Did you? Really?
I did hit a badger once while driving.
Was that in the Alpha?
It wouldn't have been on the road still if that was the case.
I was going to ask how many months it put the Alpha out for.
No, I can't remember. It was either... No, I think it might have been, actually.
No. Yeah. Oh, the old crappy one.
Yeah, the old original wonderful one, Ben. Yeah,
not your current one. Yeah.
Not my Mito, no. The 145.
It's still
one,
on the road. Oh, that's this. I love that. I was in the kitchen the other day thinking about that, and it just made me chuckle again. cracking moment. So, what about you two then? Have you had any favorite moments?
I think
Shit Me's got to be up there, isn't it?
I was going to say King's reaction to that soundtrack that we did for him was pretty funny. Only for us, I'm sure most listeners couldn't give a shit. But anyway,
I mean, the Shit Me thing did show me that occasionally you can put in a lot of work to these ridiculous things that we do. So yeah. I was genuinely impressed by the production value that you'd put into that.
I mean, it's much easier when we interview people like Tim Sherwood. You know, that's nice and easy because you just call him up and say, you know, what's occurring.
Well, he'll be in at Man United soon with Mourinho going mad. I've already shown you what one pundit said the other day. So,
yeah, who said that? Because that looked very much like something you'd just written and then taken a photo of.
No, I just screenshotted it for ease of thing. I can't remember who it was now. It was a defender. Can't remember his name.
Gary Neville?
Oh, Martin Keown.
I don't think it was Keown. I don't think it was Neville, because Neville would be saying, "Get me in there. Get me in there," wouldn't he? Because you know what he's like, gobby little shit. Gary Neville's like...
Oh, I actually strongly disagree, John. Well, actually, I don't disagree. He is a bit of a character, but I would say that he's actually one of the best pundits on TV.
Well,
because he doesn't pull punches, and I think, with the exception of the World Cup, which he had a very bad World Cup, but you know, if you were working on ITV, you'd struggle.
Yeah, that's
but I
true.
Think his Sky Sports work with Jamie Carragher is fantastic. They're an excellent double act.
You know who the best pundit of all time was, and he doesn't do it anymore, and he's only appeared in like brief moments. Best
Cantona?
Pundit of all time.
Gareth
not Cantona, Ben. Not Cantona. Leonardo, the Brazilian midfielder in the 90s. When Leonardo, he speaks perfect English amongst a load of other perfect languages, supremely well dressed, very intelligent. When Leonardo appeared doing football punditry, he was fantastic. But he was too important for the job. So he's obviously... I think he's director of football at AC Milan or something now.
Hmm. Yeah, he's moved back to Milan for the season, hasn't he? Yeah.
Anyway, what's your favourite moment, Key?
I mean, I'd like to say all the time that I've spent with you two, but that would be a filthy, filthy lie.
Yeah, that'd be shit. That'd be shit and cheesy.
That's why it takes so long to record this many episodes, is because we can't really be asked to talk to each other.
We actually hate each other, and in real life, when we meet up, we spend most of our time stabbing each other with plastic forks from cheap salad things at the supermarket sandwich section.
I would probably say one of my favourite things has been the episode that we recorded in Wales when we were out there with the Subarus.
Yeah. I can't remember.
And obviously, we just got more and more drunk as we were recording. And we were all sat together in the room at the Travelodge. And the phrase pump on a curb will always stick with me.
Pump on a curb. I remember pump on a curb.
Pump on a curb.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them in North Wales, isn't there?
Yeah, pump on a curb.
Was that the time I flooded the Travelodge by mistake?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Broke the shower. Couldn't work a shower curtain.
That was hilarious. Yeah, you couldn't work a shower curtain. I mean, what is going on?
First thing you said
I've
when we
never
turned
had
up
a shower curtain.
Before. Shower's leaking, guys.
Yeah, it's leaking. Like it was all over the floor and everything. But I didn't know that you had to put the shower curtain on the inside of the bath. That to me, that doesn't make sense, because then I'm going to stand on the shower curtain and rip it off the hooks. But apparently that's how shower curtains work anyway. Anyway,
you're an absolute pleb.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know now. That's the important thing.
I've never had to worry about shower curtains before. I've had like solid glass panels and stuff in the way, which is much safer and better for the environment as well.
Good. So, yeah. So, 50 more episodes then, lads?
No. No, I reckon we got 3 or 4 left in us. And then we're going to have to change it to something else.
Before you unfortunately pass away.
I don't think I'm going to pass away within the next 4 episodes or so.
I mean, 2 years. Look how long it's taken us to do 50, so, you know, another 4 could take years.
Yeah, where'd you go from here when you've achieved everything that we've achieved? You know, what is there left to do in the podcasting game?
Continue to scrape the bottom of the barrel, I guess.
Maybe just hope we keep scraping and see if you can push through the bottom of the barrel and see what's underneath the barrel. Maybe it's another barrel, or maybe it's something else. Who knows?
So the new tagline is, smooth traffic scraped through the bottom of the barrel.
That's when you find that you're actually part of a huge selection of barrels that have been perched precariously on a lake in the middle of a park in London. And you're part of a terrible art installation.
If I ever see Christo, I swear to God, I'm going to punch him. I'm going to punch him right in the mouth.
Well, exciting news for the listeners here is that episode 50 does mean that we've come up with a new logo.
It does, yes.
I don't really know when we'll release the logo, because if we release it before the episode, then it kind of gives away that we've got a new logo, and it ruins this part of this segment. I've already ruined it by just talking about it, but, you know.
Yeah.
When are we going to do some merchandise as well, like the smooth traffic ping pong paddle?
Ah, the ping pong paddles!
Oh, dear. And we promised ourselves we'd do that when we get 10 subscribers. So, you know, nearly there.
10 subscribers? Yep.
Only 8 more to go.
What was the other thing we were going to do? Was it smooth traffic mace spray or something?
I think we should do a smooth traffic flamethrower. I think that's a good idea.
No, that's for too much money.
If you've got too much money and you'd like to sponsor a podcast, think of smooth traffic when you're choosing a more successful podcast to sponsor.
Yeah, exactly. And then turn around and never come back.
But please don't burn us with your flamethrower.
I don't know about this 50th episode thing. I'm not particularly excited about it. I don't think anyone is, really.
I mean, I was about 3 months ago when we started talking about it, but then...
We had some great ideas.
You know, we were just recording episode 49 at the time, and...
We've got some...
Ever had any good ideas, though, have we? We've just had average ideas that we've put jingles next to make them sound amazing.
More jingles, that's all I'm thinking.
Yeah,
true. Maybe we could have more jingles.
If you want more jingles in smooth traffic, well, tweet us or don't.
Or send us some sound bites and we'll put them into a jingle.
Yeah,
yes.
Send us sound bites
for
we'll
our
make
feedback
jingles.
Section.
Yes, so that's a really good idea, Ben.
Thank you.
I'm just reading the news at the moment because that's how I am in smooth traffic's 50th episode. Basically, I'm reading the independent.co.uk. Colombians warned not to have sex as intense heatwave continues.
I heard about this the other day.
Yeah, well, it was only put on the website yesterday, King, so you heard about it yesterday, you cheeky little scamp, pretending you know more than you actually do, like you're some sort of South American correspondent. Yes, basically, the Santa Marta City Health Secretary, Julio Salas, he has basically said, avoid making love or having sex at times when the temperature is high, especially at noon, because this activity places physical demands on you and increases your heart rate. He advised that if residents believe physical activity is absolutely necessary, they should wait until after sunset or at times when the temperature is lower, like winter. So, yeah, if you're Colombian.
Good public service announcement from us there, and when it takes us 3.5 weeks to release the podcast, that'll be a bit late. So if people die now, you know, that's on you, Johnny. That's on you.
This is Edge on Art. I know everything about art. I've been to the Louvre.
Okay, Johnny, today's Edge on Art piece for you is one that Rob wants to hear your opinion on for some reason. So why not? This is an oil on canvas by a Dutch geezer called Vincent. Let me send you a link to it so you can see what we're getting at.
I hope this is good. I hope this is good, because this is the 50th episode, and I feel like I deserve some nice art. Not terrible.
It's quite nice art, actually. It's Starry Night. Is it Starry Night? One of those.
Oh, I like Starry Night. This is a really good painting, actually. Actually, before I start talking about this particular painting, what I'm going to do is I'm basically just going to go on Instagram, because...
Got better things to do.
Oh, yeah, I just feel like it, to be honest. So, this, and I'm talking about the WhatsApp group right now, because that's where I've sent the picture. This is the last contact I had with Starry Night, and it's by a Korean tattoo artist in Seoul, and and their specialism is like miniature, kind of tidy, arty little tattoos, basically. And there's that one of Starry Night, which I thought was really, really nice, and I liked it. And there's another one as well, which I'm looking for as we speak, of my favourite painting. I know it's here somewhere. I'm just wondering if anyone's listening right now. I hope you had a nice day. I hope you had a sausage roll or something.
Tweet us if you've had a nice day, listeners.
Tweet me directly if you've had a sausage roll, because I want to know about it. Because recently Morrison's have been doing some really nice sausage rolls. They're doing now in their bakery section, because we've got a lot of Morrison's up here in Yorkshire, obviously. They're doing the best sort of farmhouse rolls and Toulouse sausage rolls. Really, really good.
Have you had the big one, John? It's like £1.70 and it's like a foot long sausage roll.
No, I don't think I could get through that, to be honest. That sounds like a struggle. Okay.
It's incredibly disappointing, I'll be honest, but I had one.
Where did you get that? In a Morrison's?
Yeah.
They do that, do they?
Yeah, it was like a special offer thing, and then they still do them, presumably because they were popular, but it's just a giant fucking sausage roll.
You've definitely done it wrong, King. Go for the best farmhouse one next time, because they're really good. They're high quality, I tell you. Here it is, I found it now. Right, okay, we can get back to...
After that brief interlude.
We need some lift music to play over the top of that.
Yeah, we do. There we go. So these two here, these are the last contact I had with... Well, it started off, obviously, with Van Gogh and Starry Night here as well. But Gustav Klimt's The Kiss, my favourite painting, done in tattoo form. Remarkable piece of work by the tattoo artist, I think, because there is some serious detail on that. Now, I don't know how tattoos work. I don't even know if they're made with real paint or anything, but I reckon after a couple of years that won't look as clear as it does in the picture there. So anyway, we're talking about Starry Night, aren't we? Really nice painting, don't you think? I feel like there's a lot of melancholy in it, though. Do you know what I mean?
I would say that's a very good description of it.
There's a lot of the Starry Night is kind of traditionally, a Starry Night in general is kind of a pretty sort of scene, isn't it? Everyone looks up and goes, look at the stars. But here it's kind of, it looks more like a dark sea instead. And there's lots of sort of wave shapes and stuff, and it looks a bit more threatening. It looks a bit too powerful to be a calm, twinkling, starry night. And obviously there's that weird kind of black tree thing in the foreground as well, which to me looks more like...
Looks like a fire, doesn't it?
It looks like Mordor, Ben. It looks like Mordor.
Sorry, yeah. Mordor, yeah. Apologies.
It looks like Mordor. Yeah, it looks like Mordor in the shape of a strange tree. And I think Vincent actually was thinking about Mordor as he painted that picture. But yeah, I feel like I like it, and I like the sort of style it's done in, and I like the big strokes and the weird structure to it, but I don't feel like it's a happy painting, and I think people who refer to it as like a happy, beautiful painting might be missing the point a bit. And the point is, Van Gogh went to Mordor.
Van Gogh went to Mordor.
Van Gogh actually went to Mordor. And that, basically there...
Hang on, so you're telling me that Van Gogh went to a fictional place some 40-odd years before it was even put to paper?
Yes.
To be fair, King, he did paint this a year after he was put in his mental asylum. So he wasn't all with it.
And... what's French for mental asylum, King? Mordor. So there we go.
Jesus Christ.
He might not have been mental, King. He might have just been able to see the future. So
I'm starting to think that John is, though.
King, I've been to the Louvre, and I've been to the Burton Art Gallery. I know all about art. I'm an expert. And this is basically what it is. It is a sad painting, a bit melancholy, full of worry, slight element of dread, a lot of Mordor. There is a lot of Mordor. Because look at the landscape in the background there. Behind the town, mountainy, dark, cold, Mordor. See what I mean? There's a lot of Mordor in that painting. And
so are you saying that Tolkien was inspired by this painting?
No, Tolkien didn't write. He didn't write The Lord of the Rings or anything like that. He didn't do it.
Right.
I mean, he might have edited it slightly, but I don't think he wrote it. I think basically he found Gandalf's original diaries and basically published
fucking
them under his
Gandalf.
Own name. Gandalf. So what do you think of the paintings?
I'm a big fan of Starry Night.
Yeah.
I was intrigued to know where it sort of sat with you, because obviously based on your previous opinions on some art, I'd have thought you might have said it was silly swirly lines. But
no.
I'm pleased that you're a fan of it.
Yeah, that's what we call high quality art. Art that makes you happy. But I think there's a lot more there's a lot going on in that painting.
Oh, absolutely.
That is not... It's even the title, Starry Night, like, it's a blank... It's a facade of a title, isn't it? Starry Night. Okay. Okay. But when you look at that, that's not really that starry. That's kind of threatening, I think. Because the stars are really big.
Mm.
Stars don't make that much light. And if they do, you've had too much absinthe. Or you're in Mordor, where they are really fucking bright.
Right.
But yeah, I think if that was an earthly scene, they're too bright, they're too big. I think there's an element of can't handle how small I am going on there. Do you know what I mean?
I have literally no idea what you mean, but well done.
Yeah, thanks. But Ben, you watch fire on a TV, so...
There's nothing wrong with that.
There is. That's not real fire, Ben.
It's on Netflix, it's real. It's fine. It starts with a little flurry, and then it sort of picks up.
I was hoping that, because it was the 50th episode, I wouldn't have to do this, Ben, but I think you're going to have to get a voucher. I think you're going to have to end up with a voucher.
Put him down those stairs.
Get down the stairs.
Harsh.
Well, in the world of Deadliest Boot Spaces, things have got ridiculous, frankly. I got bored doing normal car boot spaces, comparing them to each other, and we've reached the stage where we're now... It's just mad. It's just mad. And this probably is the maddest of the lot. So,
well, it should be. It's episode 50. Woo!
Yeah. Woo! Yeah, you know what? This one is, as Ben would say, full balls out of the bath. Deadliest Boot Spaces.
Ah, Ben. You say that too much, if anything.
Yeah, Ben loves getting his balls out of the bath, which is funny because he only ever takes showers. Strange.
True story.
So, basically, I have the drinking water capacity of the Red Dwarf spaceship. And I have 12,056,738 Audi SQ7s.
Oh, Christ. I mean, might as well just flip a coin. Is there any point even trying to work this out?
Which one holds more?
Can you just tell us the capacity of the Red Dwarf spaceship? Or even just its general size, you know, how long is it? It's got to be a few, like, a couple of kilometres long, isn't it?
The Red Dwarf spaceship is several miles long, I think. I think it's something like 6 miles long. But apparently the Red Dwarf can hold a crew of 1,169, and it has enough capacity in terms of food and drinking water to keep that crew fed for 10,000 years.
Also, it's a mining ship, isn't it? So presumably it's got a big cargo bay for stuff it mines.
Yeah, I couldn't find the cargo bay stat for it, sadly, but no, it wouldn't be big. But anyway, 10,000 years, I worked out you need about 4 litres of water a day to be healthy, don't you? You see how much work I put into this now? That's at least 2 sums I've had to do here. And then I've calculated basically that for an entire year, you would need 853,370 litres.
Oh, sorry, so we're not doing the cargo of, or the space in the spaceship, just the amount of water that it holds.
The amount of water that it holds.
Oh, that's easy then.
You know, to keep the crew alive, basically. Yeah. So I've worked out, using that stat, how big the tank of drinking water will have to be to keep 1,169 crew watered for 10,000 years.
That's a lot of water.
Then I've just found what 12,056,738 Audi SQ7s can hold in their boot.
Right.
I don't know how long it would take to make that many Audi SQ7s, because in 20 years, the Ford Focus has sold 2 million cars in the UK.
So quite a few. So are you saying we're not going to be able to test this?
Well, no, yeah, we can't test this. This is going to have to be purely relying on my maths. So, you know, at some point someone will email in and go, oh, no, no, Johnny, you can't do the maths. The maths don't add up. And I'll just be like, yeah, well, this is what you get for listening to Smooth Traffic. We don't care if it's accurate or not. But you know what? We try.
No,
so, yeah, drinking water capacity of the Red Dwarf spaceship, or 12,056,738 Audi SQ7s.
Kingy, do you want to go first? Because I always go first recently and I keep winning, so I feel bad for you.
Yeah, King.
Don't patronise me, Ben. Oh dear, Craig Charles would be turning in his grave right now, wouldn't he?
Either that or just hosting a funk and soul show somewhere.
More than likely, yeah.
Wouldn't that be a cool party? A Craig Charles funk and soul show with like an underground cemetery kind of crypty vibe to it.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to an event like that.
Anyway.
I don't know, let's go with the Audis.
Okay. King has got the Audis, so Ben.
Did you get the feeling he's given up on life, Johnny?
Yeah, well,
he just can't be arsed anymore.
He's a knob, isn't
Didn't
he?
Didn't even bother thinking
he's
about it.
He's a knob. Whereas I know Ben.
Ben, we've had ages to think about it since John's been banging on about the stats for Red Dwarf.
Yeah. See, if a proper game show contestant King would talk them through their thought process.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very good for the listeners if it's all internal.
Yeah, King, you're ruining the podcast again.
God's sake. If Johnny's segment's such a disgrace, it's all your fault. I think episode 50 is signalling the end to Smooth Traffic, isn't it? Which is a shame.
Like everything, when it gets to 50, it should be put down.
Yeah.
King, you haven't got long.
You're absolutely right, Ben, I haven't. But I will sleep well knowing that both of you will die before me.
Doubtful.
Well, you're older than me, Ben. And, well, look at the way John lives his life.
The only reason you'll sleep well, King, is because we've given you a lethal injection.
Anyway, I pick Red Dwarf.
Cool. So, 12,056,738 Audi SQ7s can hold 8,500,290 litres. Does that number add up?
Sorry, I wasn't really listening. How many?
8 billion.
Yeah.
500 million.
Right.
And 290 litres.
Okay.
The drinking capacity of the drinking water capacity of the Red Dwarf spaceship is 8,533,700,000 litres.
Again, didn't really process the first number. Thought it was going to be remarkably different. You're going to have to tell us who wins.
Ben wins!
Yay! Well,
Ben. Again!
Look at that.
King, you suck at this game. You started off so well and now you're the worst person in the world at this game. It's not hard, is it? Jeez.
Oof. I know, I've lost 5 in a row.
5 in a row?
Yeah.
You're like a really bad football team, King.
Yeah, well done. Top work, John.
So yeah,
you know who you remind me of? Someone really rubbish at something. Sick burn, John.
Yeah, that's right. Have some of that. So yeah, that is Deadliest Boot Spaces. Maybe that is the final ever Deadliest Boot Spaces, because I can't really see where I go from here. I can't see
anywhere.
I mean,
we could just go back to playing regular Deadliest Boot Spaces.
We could, but I think everybody would be disappointed now, wouldn't they? Because they're all expecting, like, you know, the liquid mass of an asteroid or something.
I imagine most people have turned off by now.
You say that, Ben, but for some reason people keep downloading episodes of Smooth Traffic.
Mm.
We don't know who they are.
It's curious.
Is it the Rwandans we're popular with?
Somalia.
Hello, Somalia.
Where was the... for our World Cup special, we had a huge spike in downloads one day, didn't we?
We did.
200 people from somewhere like Thailand or something. Where was it?
I think it was someone who hasn't qualified for the World Cup as well, so...
Well, like Bristol or something.
Bristol, yes. Yeah, that's a country.
Good. Anyway, thanks for listening. Keep it up.
Yeah, Deadliest Boot Spaces. Is this the last one?
Ooh, I wonder what the score is. Ben Pierce.
8.
Robert King.
8.
Johnny.
Hello.
Let's talk Jaguar.
Yeah, go on then.
Jaguar.
You've had some Jaguars recently.
Yeah, I have had a couple of Jaguars recently. I've had the Jaguar XE, compact executive saloon. I've had the Jaguar XF, just executive saloon. Not compact, just executive saloon. Should probably tell you about them, really, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Which one did you prefer, John?
Well, I preferred the XE. Because okay. I like small saloon cars. I just like small saloon cars. First, when I saw the XE, I thought that looks boring. Because it's kind of very square, not very interesting. It had like a silver paint job or something like that. And I thought, oh, that looks boring. And then you drive it and you start to discover, hang on a sec, this has got something a bit about it. And actually, I think before I drove the car that I drove on Saturday, that is probably the best handling car in the class in terms of all-round experience. Superb, comfortable ride, great handling, superb grip. The 2-litre diesel engine can do 60 miles per gallon without you even having to break a sweat. It's a really cracking little car, the XE, and that now comes highly recommended with my new Johnny seal of approval. Get down there and get one. So yeah, so I really want to big that car up now, because that is a really, really good car. Better than the 3 Series, possibly better than the Mercedes C-Class, depending on how you prefer to drive. It's more sporty than the C-Class, it drives better than the C-Class, not as comfortable as the C-Class, and not as chintzy, maybe not chintzy, not as flash as the interior of the C-Class, because that has got a very flash interior, very, very, ooh, nightclub, that kind of feeling, you know? You get in and you go, ooh.
You haven't been to a nightclub in years.
Nightclub.
Don't kid us.
Says Ben.
Nightclubs aren't for me. I mean,
more years.
I don't understand the point in nightclubs, actually. I don't know what the point is in nightclubs. What do you go there for, apart from to take ecstasy and drink too many shots? There is no
point. I think
you've
answered your own question there.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
If you are a child or one of those kids of today, please tweet us at Smooth Traffic. Kids,
yeah, because
dating.
King wants to buy some ecstasy. He loves the stuff. He loves it. Absolutely loves it.
He likes Smarties.
The XF, same thing. The XF is bigger, so that's more BMW 5 Series rival. It's not as good as a 5 Series. 5 Series is probably the best car in this segment still, although I haven't driven the new one, so might have to reserve judgment there. It's very well put together. It feels very nice. The best thing about the XF is the way it rides. It's got the most comfortable non-air suspension that I've experienced. So this thing just glides down the road like some kind of sexy, sexy Arabian carpet. You know what I'm saying there? Sexy Arabian carpet. Rich textiles, King. That's what I'm talking about. Rich fucking textiles. It's got scarlet colours in there. It's got gold colours in there. It's got a little bit of purple as well. And it's got a big bloody line on it. So everybody knows you're the man. It just glides really, really smooth straight over the concrete. Is there concrete there? I wasn't even sure anymore. I could have been airborne. I couldn't tell. So really, really smooth ride. That had a 250 brake horsepower petrol engine, which I didn't particularly like. I think because it was still a 2-litre four-cylinder, I think it was missing a nice creamy six-cylinder engine. So if you buy a car that size, spoil yourself. Get a proper six-cylinder engine, because you never know how long these things are going to be around for, and it makes the car feel a whole lot better. Six cylinders.
Do you think it's set? Is that just because it's sort of designed for like a commuter, someone who's just sort of a bit, or like a salesman type who's going to be on the road for a long time, so don't really care about the engine, but it's lovely to drive, comfortable wise.
Possibly.
But would your point not be that you should get the XE in that case?
Not necessarily, because the XE is fine with a four-cylinder, but a car like an XF or a 5 Series or an E-Class deserves a 6. I just think, if you've got all that luxury around you may as well have a luxurious engine as well. You know, not an engine that was designed for smaller cars that we're now stretching to high power bands because we've got the capacity for turbochargers and stuff to evolve. So just get a 6-cylinder, basically. I mean, it was fine, but it didn't really get me going at all. And 250 felt less than 250 horsepower, to be honest, once we were moving that sort of weight around.
What sort of price range is that one in, the XF, the big one?
XF is above 35, I believe. And I think XE's like, I think XE's something like 26 to 32, something like that.
Okay. So it's probably worth paying that bit extra for a slightly bigger engine. If you're already going to be paying like 35 for it, you might as well pay a touch more and get something.
I think you could get, I think you get a six-cylinder XF for probably 38, something like that.
Yeah.
But I actually wouldn't have the XF anyway. I'd have something else. E-Class, because when you get in the E-Class, you get this feeling. When you get in the E-Class, it's like a, ooh, nightclub kind of feeling. You know what I'm saying? It's just like
so
that.
You like the nightclub feeling.
Yeah, it's like a good nightclub feeling. You know when you go into a nightclub and you get a good feeling?
Oh, is it called the E-Class for pill-based reasons?
Exactly, King. You've preloaded. That's why the E-Class is a more enjoyable nightclub experience.
The Mercedes Ecstasy Class. Interesting.
Yeah, Ecstasy. Yeah, okay. I'm seeing that.
E-Class on air suspension with a six-cylinder diesel is still the best saloon I've ever driven. Amazing car.
Cool.
It's our 50th anniversary, or our third anniversary, or if you listen to the last episode, our 60th anniversary. And, you know, we've been going 3 years now, or 50 years, or 60 years, we're not sure. But in the very early days of Smooth Traffic, me and Robert King travelled to the little town of Frankfurt, somewhere in eastern France, to attend the International Motor Show of Germania, to have a look at some cars and basically get pissed in the evenings.
It was good.
And it was a good trip. It was a good trip back in the early days of the Traff.
That was episode 2, wasn't it? When you talked about that.
2 and
it's
3.
One of the episodes that's no longer available because of we can't afford to host them all now. It's one of them.
Actually, that might change. We're in negotiations.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, me and King, we went off to Germany and we were very, very excited about a car that was on display there for the first time called the Alfa Romeo Giulia, which is a compact executive saloon by the hit band Alfa Romeo. Their first Alfa Giulia in quite some time. Their first rear wheel driven saloon in maybe 400 to 500 years. Quite a long time. So this one was quite hotly anticipated. And funnily enough, I've just driven it now, 3 years after we went to the motor show, and 3 years after this podcast started. I finally got around to driving the Alfa Giulia, and I drove it in 2.2 turbo diesel spec. So, you know, not the ideal engine for the Giulia, but I don't care anymore.
Was it fruity enough, though?
It was.
Was it the greatest experience of your entire life?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. No, I can't say it was, King. I've had some really good experiences, but Ben asking you whether the Alfa is still on the road, that's still the best moment of my life. But yeah, no, it's 2.2 diesel Speciale trim, and goodness me, what a great car that is. Alfa have really, really knocked this one out of the park, King. King, this is a 9 out of 10 car. How about that?
Holy shit.
How about that? In fact, everyone stop listening to this podcast right now. This is a 9 out of 10 car.
Why should people stop listening to us? I don't understand.
Because they need to take time to just process that. This is a very, very, very good car.
Maybe instead of telling them to stop, we should just say, would you mind, you know, we're going to give you 5 seconds of dead
just
air.
To process.
Just process that.
Yeah.
Have you processed that?
9 out of 10, John. That's massive.
It's a great car. It's a really, really good car. The steering reminds me of an Audi R8. Now, that's going to sound ridiculous to some people because they're going to be like, oh, supercar, they can't compare, it's just because you've driven one. I think I have a little bit of dribble coming out of their mouths when I say it. But you know what? Fuck those guys, because this car, the way it steers, it reminds me of an Audi R8. And that is an achievement. And you know, it's just lightning fast. It's like, it's a saloon. So it's, you know, it's not a small car, but the way it moves around on the road makes it feel like a tiny, tiny matchbox car. You know? It just goes shim, 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 just zips around like that. It doesn't give a fuck. And the great thing about it as well is that obviously it's rear wheel driven, but the rear end you can feel it losing grip before it's lost grip. So it's just got so much communication to the driver. Fantastic. I mean, as a driver's car, this is the best driving car in the entire segment. I mean, I thought the 3 Series was a good driving car. Better than that. The XE is more comfortable when you're taking it easy, but doesn't change direction like the Alfa. The Mercedes C-Class is not for driving fast. It's for cruising around in and pretending you're in a nightclub. And the Audi A4 is for going very fast, but in a very sensible way. The Giulia is none of those things. The Giulia is a flamboyant kind of experience as a car, and infinitely good fun. If you're going to buy a saloon in this class now, you should be buying the Alfa Romeo Giulia if you care about driving. If you don't care about driving, buy an A4 or buy a C-Class. But if you really love driving, you should be buying the Alfa Romeo Giulia because it's brilliant. Hopefully, I'm going to get to test the petrol model at some point in the near future because I think that car will be absolutely top-notch. But for now, I was very impressed with the diesel. The diesel's not perfect, but I mean, when has a diesel engine ever been perfect? I think I've driven maybe a BMW 6-cylinder diesel, maybe the Audi A4 V6 3-litre that I had in that long term for a little bit for Diesel Car Magazine. That was an exceptional diesel engine, but not perfect. This one's a little bit noisy, but when I'm driving an Alfa Romeo, I don't want to be sheltered completely from the mechanicals. I want it to feel like a car still, and I think that's what they've gone for there. I reckon they could have shut out a lot of the diesel noise, but you know what? Why should they? It's an Alfa Romeo. It's about a beautiful machine. It's a machine. So that's what you've got. 8-speed automatic gearbox that you find in the BMWs and the Maseratis and all those other fancy-ass brands, and works really, really well. Paddle shifters are an optional extra, strangely enough, but tick that box. Tick that fucking box, because you're going to get passionate. You're going to get real passionate behind the wheel of this car, and you're going to be wanting complete control, and the paddle shifters are definitely one you're going to have. Top notch. Well done, Alfa Romeo. I'm so pleased that car is as good as it looks, because obviously that's a
What's
segment.
It like inside? Is it pretty comfy?
It's
like
good.
Decent materials and stuff?
It's good. There's one part before of the interior that I think is letting it down, and that is, funnily enough, the central armrest with the little cubby hole underneath it.
Oh, really?
That feels okay. A bit flimsy to me, but the rest of it is absolutely fine and easily on a par with 3 Series BMW, Jaguar XE entry-level models, that sort of thing. My test car has got... Well, it's a Speciale, so it's got the Veloce Sports leather seats inside it, and it's also got a winter pack, so it's got heated seats and a heated steering wheel, and it's great. Really, really good. Super comfortable. Nicely put together. The things you touch all feel great. The infotainment system's not super duper, but you know, you put up with it because the car to drive is so good. You know, you can overlook some things like that, and that's what an Alfa Romeo should be about. An Alfa Romeo is never going to be a perfect car. It's always going to have problems, but if it's good enough to drive and it puts a big enough smile on your face and it makes you feel something, you can overlook the small flaws that you have. How many of us have been and seen a woman who has got huge flaws, but we can look past it because she's incredibly likable? There you have it.
Cool. So you'd have one then?
Absolutely, I would have one, except I can't because I'm skint. But if I wasn't skint, I'd have one.
Kingy, you're probably salivating quite considerably now. You'd buy one?
No, he can't have one, because if he gets one, I'll vandalise it, because he's not allowed to have one if I can't have one.
Well, I mean, if John's going to vandalise it, then what's the point? I don't believe you could vandalise it, John, if it's as good as you say.
That's a good...
Be too pretty.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I could always pay some goons to do it, though, surely.
You don't know any goons.
Oh, I reckon I can find some goons.
Assuming he finds goons, can you afford to pay goons? It's a challenge here.
They don't do it for the passion, do they?
No.
They do it for the money.
They very much embrace capitalism, and it's all about supply and demand, John. Mm-hmm. You supply them with money, and then you can demand them to do things for you.
That's definitely what it means.
I guess I'll have to pay for their expenses to travel down to
Bath. I figured that was the easiest way to explain supply and demand to John.
Maybe we'll bring back the old Johnny's Learning Annex and you can explain these concepts to him in the future.
Good point.
We haven't done a Johnny's Learning Annex for ages, actually.
Lost cause.
I'm going to bring it back for episode 51. So stick around for that.
I'm going to have a think about things I might not know, but I still want us to do this Ben's cultural awareness segment as well, King, where we ask him if he knows who Ja Rule is.
Oh, yeah. Of course. No, well, it started because Ben didn't know who Ludacris was.
Yeah.
That was that. All I know of Ludacris is the mode on the Teslas.
Oh, Ben.
Ben doesn't know a lot of things. Ben sounds incredibly intelligent, but actually he lives in a cultural black hole where he doesn't know anything that goes on outside of the BBC.
I would say the fact that I am more culturally aware than Ben is should be a massive wake-up call for him, really.
I think the idea that I'd do anything to do with the BBC, I'm not sure I listen to any of their radio or watch much of their television, so yeah, maybe that's where I'm lacking.
Ben, you're so BBC. You look like a BBC weatherman. What? You're the most BBC person I know, Ben. You've got a BBC face. You dress like a BBC person. You're nice like a BBC person. You'd be straight on the list to get hired by the BBC if they were looking for a new weatherman. It doesn't even matter that you don't know how to read the weather. You could be taught that on the spot. Point at the cloud, say it's going to rain, smile, and everyone loves you. BBC weatherman. Ben Pearce is a BBC weatherman who hasn't yet been interviewed. Just only a matter of time. In fact, next month, I reckon he'll get the job.
I mean,
I look forward to that.
Looking through all of that, I think that's actually a compliment, Ben.
It feels like it might have been.
I think he actually said nice things about you.
Yeah, I'll take that. Can we end this segment now? When I'm on a high.
Chaps.
Oh, hello.
Kingy.
To celebrate episode 50 of Smooth Traffic, Rockstar Games have released their official gameplay trailer things for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Is it that specially for us, which is nice of them?
I know. The question is, who's fucking excited, lads?
I am so excited.
I'm dribbling.
I was a quivering wreck after seeing that. To be fair, when you look at the trailers and the original Red Dead, you know, that still looked stunning. But this has just got that tiny bit of refinement that just makes it look amazing. And the maps are going to be awesome. This, apparently one of the biggest maps. Is it the biggest or biggest map that Rockstar have done? So it'll probably take you years to explore it all. It's just going to be really cool.
Isn't that true what Ben's just said, though? The old game still looks good. Like, the old game still looks really, really, really good. So imagine how good this is going to look. Especially if you're like Ben and you've got one of those fancy super-duper consoles and fancy super-tellies the BBC have given him.
Oh, the ones that you can watch just a roaring fire on.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. On Netflix, that roaring fireplace. It's so warming. A whole hour of fire.
I hope you get the runs, Ben.
Let's hope that you can make a roaring fire in Red Dead 2.
Oh, you're certainly
and keep yourself warm at night.
I like how you brought that back around, King. That was nice.
Thanks.
Because things were getting dangerously close to, you know, falling off into sort of a slope of abuse then in towards Ben. And I was, to be honest, I was completely up for that. I was completely up for laying into Ben for watching a picture of fire on his TV and thinking that it warms him. But you know what? You just brought it back around.
It does.
Really, really impressive.
Yeah, I've saved you from being thrown out of the saloon into the street to have a brawl to get us back onto Red Dead 2.
Yeah, a brawl in which I would shit on him. I would shit on Ben.
That's not part of brawling. I don't think that's involved. We can ask Rockstar, but I doubt very much that they'll have characters winning a brawl and then shitting on the opponent.
I really hope they have. That will instantly be a 9 out of 10 game if it's got shitting in it.
Anyway, I think it'll be 9 out of 10 anyway.
I think it's going to be a 9 out of 10 game. It's definitely a prequel because we weren't sure how that's going to work. So it's in the same, it's the same gang, isn't it, that John Marston was in from the original game. But earlier in that. I don't really know. But they haven't given much away, have they? It's mostly just sort of showing off the graphics and everything. But I reckon they'll probably follow suit of GTA 5 and do heists and things like that. So that could be pretty cool.
John Marston's in the trailer, isn't he?
Yeah, very briefly.
John Marston and his lady, they're in the trailer, along with some other bloke who's meant to have been there before. You know what I'm hoping for? I'm hoping that they've got that mysterious man who was in Red Dead Redemption again, who was...
Oh, the guy that just randomly appeared all the time.
Yeah, who knew everything about you and where you were from and everything. And your final meeting with him is on John Marston's gravesite, but you never find out who he was, and he just disappears into thin air.
The man in the top hat?
Yeah, the man in the top hat, who is very, very similar to a character in The Witcher 3 called Gaunter O'Dimm, who's known as the Master of Mirrors, who is a very similar sort of entity. He's got the ability to kind of stop time and do things like that, but he appears like a normal person.
Okay.
So these sort of characters appear in games sometimes, and they've they never really get explained. And I think that's probably part of their mystery, but I'd like it if that character came back again, because that was a mixture of kind of spooky and interesting and just really, really cool. And they always have like cool plots and stuff as well. So that's what I want to come back. And if he's not back, I'm going to do a poo.
Good. Cool. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say we're all very excited about this. John would like a lot of shit to be in the game. But,
I would. Not enough of that in video games.
I think we should move on from that. I kind of don't want to know much more about it now.
Yeah.
I've seen from the video how good it'll look and just how vast the world is. And I kind of don't want to know anymore. Because
storytelling is always very good, isn't it? So you kind of just know it'll be a great game. You'll have, you know, your classic sort of Wild West stuff, horses and...
Well, that's the thing. You build a relationship with your horse, don't you?
Yeah. If it dies, you have to go again from scratch or something, and you train it over a period of time. So
horses!
It's a right pain in the ass.
Yeah. Horses!
So you have to treat it right, John.
Horses. I'm saying horses a lot because I checked something the other day on Google, because I wanted to just check on this and make sure that this was right. Okay, I'm going to read this out to you. Okay, so I'm on the website Practical Horseman, practicalhorsemanmag.com, and the question to the vet is it okay to feed beer to my horse? A reader asks if it's safe for her horse to drink beer. Question: an Irish racehorse trainer once told me that it's traditional to feed a horse Guinness after he wins a competition. Is there any nutritional benefit or danger to doing this? Can horses get drunk? How much beer should I give my horse? Blah 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 blah. Sarah Ralston, VMD, P little HD, big D, IPL, all lowercase, full stop, ACVN, all uppercase. Many horses love the taste of beer, possibly because it consists of ingredients such as barley and hops, which resemble the grain in horse feeds. The alcoholic content is not a concern, as horses do not get drunk easily, if at all. Their livers process alcohol extremely rapidly because they naturally produce large amounts of the alcohol enzyme dehydrogenase. This is an enzyme that breaks down the products of fermentation, which occurs in the horse's large intestine during normal digestion. It quickly converts all forms of alcohol to carbohydrates to be used for energy. A 12-ounce serving of beer can range from 55 calories. Calories? Really bad for you. Calories? Much better. 55 calories for some light beers to 250 for heavy ales. Open bracket. My husband's horse, Sir Galahad, prefers Samuel Adams Lager, which is 160 calories per bottle. He was once offered Coors Light, and he spat it out. Close brackets. The average 1,200-pound horse requires a total caloric intake of about 17,000 calories per day just for maintenance. 1 pound of standard grain mix provides more than 2,000 calories, so there is no need to cut back on your horse's regular feed if you give him a bottle of beer after a ride. He will burn up the extra calories easily. The amounts of carbohydrates and water in a single bottle or can of beer are negligible in view of a horse's total needs. However, beer does provide some minerals, niacin, B vitamins, folate, and flavonoids, all of which horses need. So there may be some minor nutritional benefits, although a good quality feeding program already provides nutrients in adequate amounts. Terms and conditions apply. Other potential benefits may result if you mix beer into your horse's water, especially where dehydration is a concern, as when travelling. If he loves the taste of beer, and he probably does, because what a lad, adding a bit of beer to his water may encourage him to drink more. To my knowledge, beer will not cause a positive drug test in horses, but you might want to double check with your sports governing organisation before offering your horse a beer before competition. Beware too that other competitors who see you feeding your horse beer before a class might complain, even though there is no evidence at all it would in any way alter performance. And that horse might kick the shit out of that guy anyway, because no one gets in the way of his beer. A safe method to give your horse a beer is to pour it into a bucket. Otherwise, I see no danger in feeding your horse a beer, especially after a nice ride. Although it adds a very small amount of calories relative to a horse's overall intake, I would not give an overweight horse a steady diet of beer. But one or two beers a week will definitely do no harm. Boom! You can feed your horse beer and it's fine. The vet fucking said so. What a result. Anyway, we're talking about Red Dead.
I feel educated.
So the question is, can you feed your horse beer in Red Dead Redemption 2?
Well, if you can't, it's not very realistic, is it?
If no. that's not in the game, it's not realistic and I don't want to play anymore.
That's a lie though, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, so that's very educational. Thank you, Johnny.
My pleasure.
So back to that then. Johnny, you dug something up quite interesting earlier, which was this new Xbox subscription thingy-majiggy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. Interesting, that, isn't it? I actually can't remember what's that. Involved. It was...
So you get... The idea is it's like a phone contract. So you get an Xbox, you get a subscription to Live, which you'd normally pay for, obviously, and also a subscription to Xbox Game Pass, which is their sort of... It's not a streaming service, but there's like 100 titles that you can download and play willy-nilly. So it's almost like a library of games, I suppose.
Are they all shit games, though?
No, I think there's some pretty modern stuff on there. Certainly Microsoft first-party titles, I think, are there, and then slightly older stuff from elsewhere. But so it's not, you know, it's not brilliant. But then I think it's only normally about £7 a month, so if you were going to buy 4 or 5 games a year, it's probably good value, but it doesn't work for me, I don't think.
But they're old games, are they?
I haven't really looked into it too much, to be honest. I'm tight. But I think the idea is interesting, isn't it? Because they were saying about £35 a month, I think, or £40 a month for that. So it's very much taken the sort of mobile phone subscription model. So if you can't afford to pay your £200, £400, whatever console you're going to buy outright, and then buy a subscription to Xbox Live, which is, what, £30, £40 a year? It's quite a good way of doing it, if you're a bit strapped for cash.
I don't know. What are you thinking?
Well, my only question about this is, and to be fair, it's probably in the article, but I didn't get all the way to the end of it. Do you physically own the console then, or is it leased?
I would imagine you do by the end of the 2 years. I don't think you... I don't know, actually, but I'm sure they wouldn't ask for it back after 2 years, because what use is it to... So I think it's, much like a phone, once you get to the end of the contract, that is then yours.
Right, okay.
That would be my assumption. But I'm making it up.
Well, you know, that's pretty much what we do on here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, because I think that, to me, that's Microsoft's way of trying to claw back some market share, because there'll be those out there that can't afford a console, so they're going to try and, you know, tempt them in rather than them going to PlayStation.
Because I think it works out cheaper, doesn't it? If someone were to do it this way, it works out cheaper over the course of the 2 years.
Oh, in terms of the subscription to the other things as well?
Yeah, so okay. All in, I think you end up saving about £150 or something like that over
oh, really?
The course of the 2 years on the S. Yeah. It wasn't much on the X.
No.
I think it was only sort of
that's interesting.
£20-30.
Do you think that's a long-term game then? Because, again, if you've got the console, you'll buy more games. If you're used to having Game Pass for 2 years, then you probably will continue that afterwards at £7 or £8 a month, whatever it is. And you're playing for gold, so it's pulling people into their ecosystem. I suppose they can afford to lose a little bit of money on it to get somebody on board.
It's quite logical from their perspective, because as you say, you know, they do need to do something to gain a bit more market share.
Hmm.
And, you know, obviously a lot of games that come out these days, Sony seem to obtain exclusive advertising rights for them.
As they should.
More so than Microsoft do, even though, you know, the majority of games are available on both consoles.
Yeah. I think the only one recently I've seen that's not is... I think it was Battlefield 5 seemed to be advertising saying plays best on Xbox or whatever at the end.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure it was that. But yeah, you're right though, it's very rare. You more often than not see the PlayStation logo at the end of a trailer.
Yeah.
Which is silly really, because Microsoft, the organisation they are, they could easily afford to tempt a few people in with it. But maybe they just are not bothering at the moment because that's expensive way and people aren't drawn in by it. I don't know. But they have bought a load of new developers, haven't they, recently?
On the topic of Battlefield... Pre-orders on Battlefield are down something like 78%.
Really?
On Battlefield 5, yeah.
Why? It looks brilliant.
There is...
Is that because people want realism rather than fun?
Well, that's a good question, but a market analysis firm, the Cohen Group, recently released a report which raised concerns about Battlefield 5's potential sales number. Very poor pre-order sales thus far, apparently. It's out in October, but the problem is it's up against two other major titles... Call of Duty Black Ops 4 and the Red Dead Redemption 2, and it's causing very sweaty bums at the Battlefield 5 developer Battle Club, because they're the people who make it. They're very worried about it at the moment, and according to this group's person, Doug Kreutz, he said, EA's Battlefield 5 currently appears to be potentially headed for serious disappointment. If we had to pick one game to be a casualty of the crowded October window, this would clearly be it. Croyds revealed that Battlefield 5 pre-orders are thus far almost 85% lower than those of Call of Duty Black Ops 4.
That's mad.
Which is so between 2 and 4 times more than what it is normally.
So I've always been a Battlefield person over Call of Duty in the past sort of 3 or 4 generations, I suppose. I just think the Battlefield environment's more real, I suppose, more destructive and all that sort of stuff, which I like. But I have to admit, I will not be buying it on day one like I often do, because Red Dead's going to take all my time for probably the next six months after release.
Yeah,
looks good enough for that. So I just don't see the point of buying a shooter like that when Red Dead comes out. So
I can see us all playing Red Dead even on the toilet. I think we'll be putting the PlayStation 4 in a backpack, carrying the TV upstairs and continuing to play right through the poos.
Or just a bucket in the bedroom. Yeah.
Cut a hole in the sofa. That'd be easier. Poo on the sofa. Poo in the bucket. Poo everywhere.
Okay.
Just make sure you've got a big bucket of Cheetos nearby so you can eat while you play.
Cheetos?
Isn't that the traditional?
Do you eat Cheetos, Ben?
Snack? You have to work for me here. This is an Americanism.
Oh, I don't speak American. I don't know what they do over there. They're a strange culture. Very strange culture.
What's it for our British listeners?
Oh, for our British listeners, get some Space Raiders and maybe a box of Freddos.
Frugo for our Polish listeners.
That's a drink, Ben. Come on.
Yeah, well, I couldn't think of any food.
Okay.
We'll be sure to talk about Red Dead in a lot of detail in a few months' time, I suppose, when it's out.
Or a month. No, because we won't have time to do the podcast.
That's it. We're going to take a hiatus for 6 months when that comes out. We'll be on Twitch instead. You can listen to us talk about it on Twitch.
We should try a Twitch one day. Can we do a Twitch?
Yeah, why not?
Do we have to have a thing to have a Twitch? Like, how do we do the Twitch?
Twitch account. That's probably all we need. I'm sure we can co-op it.
This sounds like something that you have to organise, Ben, and we turn up for.
Not a problem, Johnny. I will look into it for you.
Cool. Well, that puts the nappy on this episode of Smooth Traffic. And
what goes through your head sometimes, so I do not know.
Tidied up, and that little one's ready to get straight back out there. And that's what we're going to do. Thanks for listening. Give us 9 grand. Subscribe in all the right places. And something else as well. It's not important, though, is it? No one ever does it. So, thanks for listening over the last 50 episodes of just ever-increasing nonsense. And we'll see you in 50 episodes time for the 100th anniversary, which will be held live in Marbella on a boat. And we've already planned for it, and we haven't paid for it yet. So give us 9 grand, and we'll do it. We will do it. 9 grand.
Oh, if we had 9 grand,
we'll go to Marbella.
Go to Marbella.
Boat party, podcast. Waterproof equipment.
Are we going to invite our listeners as well?
No, I don't want them to spoil it.
Big boat.
No, I don't want them to spoil it. If I've got a massive boat and we're doing a podcast, I want plenty of space for me to stretch out. And also, I don't want to have to worry about people falling over the side of the boat, because boats have got very low guardrails, haven't they? So if I do a handbrake turn, someone might fall out. And then, you know what's going to happen there, don't you? They're going to get chewed up.
John, the only person that would fall out of a boat would be you.
No. Yeah, true.
No, I wouldn't fall out.
You'd have more people to chuck rubber rings at you so you could stay afloat.
Yeah, but they'd just keep chucking them on top of me to build sort of a rubber ring tower thing, wouldn't they? But when I'm,
that'd be me.
Yeah, that'd be you, Ken, playing some sort of medieval.
You'd be chucking stones at him.
That medieval.
Who brings house thing. Bricks on board a boat?
No, we're not doing that. But yeah, the 100th episode, Marbella Boat Party podcast. That's why we need the 9 grand. So if one of you out there has got 9 grand lying around.
Or a boat.
I'll tell you what, if you've got a boat, we'll just borrow the boat. But it has to be somewhere near Marbella, because I don't know how to drive the boat from, like, I don't know, if it's in Bristol or something. I don't think I can drive it to Marbella. I think I'd probably get lost, end up in
Somalia.
Yeah, although I think it'd be fine if I, like, went to Somalia.
Anyway, whilst you keep talking about Somalia, I'm going to go and get some food. So thanks for listening.
Bye then.
Bye. Happy birthday.
Whose birthday is it?
Aren't you going to sing, King? Happy 50th birthday to us.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. I don't know the other words.